Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome to Imperfectly Polished, the space where we celebrate confidence, wellness, self-care, and the beautifully messy journey of being human. Now, today's conversation is one that's everywhere right now, from celebrity headlines to dinner table debates, TikTok trends, and doctor's rooms. We're talking about GLP-1 medications, the injections people are using for weight loss, diabetes management, and wellness. But beyond the before and after photos, there's a much deeper conversation happening. Why are so many people turning to these medications? Why is there still so much shame around weight and body image? Why are people secretly using them and pretending they're not? And emotionally, psychologically, and medically, how did we get here? Joining me today is someone who works directly in the world of medical wellness and aesthetic medicine. Dr. Farah Green has recently launched her own wellness practice in Melrose, Johannesburg, with a special interest in medical weight management and aesthetic medicine, helping patients feel healthy, confident, and like the best version of themselves. Farah, welcome to Imperfectly Polished. Tell me how you got into this field of medicine.
So, Monique, obviously I'm a doctor and I've had quite an unconventional career path, but weight management, to be completely honest, is something I've struggled with my entire life. And I started realizing I can't do this on my own. And I met Dr. Charlene Wahlberg and got talking to her, and I fell in love with the work she was doing and asked her if she would be willing to train me up in the space. And yeah, I'm very grateful for her. She's taught me so, so much. And it's just a space that I can relate to, that I can relate to my patients to, and that I'm very, very passionate about.
Farah, we always start now with what is in your bag. What's one thing in your handbag or doctor's bag that people would be surprised by?
One thing I'll never leave my house without, and it's always in my bag and it's always in my car, is a protein bar. So, I mean, I tell my patients all day that they need to nourish themselves, they mustn't skip meals, and I have to walk the talk somehow. So I'm on the run a lot. And I often need what I call my emergency stash of snacks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think mine's as healthy as a protein bar, but
mine didn't used to be either.
What does wellness personally look like for you when no one's watching?
So honestly, it's some quiet me time. Before the emails start coming in, before the patients, before all my notifications start beeping. So I have a cup of coffee, I maybe go for a walk, or honestly, I mindlessly scroll on Instagram.
Like us all.
No one's needing anything from me. And I think we've made wellness very complicated, when sometimes all it is just a short sleep and a bit of peace and quiet.
You've just opened your own practice. Congratulations on
that.
Thank you. What has this season taught you about courage and betting on yourself?
Sure. It's taught me that courage doesn't feel the way you think it will. So I personally kept waiting to feel ready and confident and certain that I could open my own practice.
There's never a right time.
Exactly. And honestly, that moment never came. So I just had to decide and then figure it out as I went. You know, I had to take a leap of faith. And what it's taught me is that betting on yourself is terrifying, but it's also completely worth it at the same time. And I don't think there's any version that exists that it's going to feel comfortable at first.
What's one wellness trend you secretly love and one you wish would disappear immediately?
It's not secretly, but I really, really love what Discovery and Vitality are doing in terms of giving out their free workouts to their members. So I'm seeing so many people who previously didn't move their bodies at all who are now having access to these classes. People are suddenly joining Pilates classes, bar classes, starting to move their body. And I just think that's like such a great incentive.
Which is good for mental and physical well-being.
Absolutely. It's just good for general health, overall health. And one I would happily never hear about again would be anything that markets itself as detox. So pills, teas, you name it. Anything that says it's a detox product. I mean, we've got a liver, and our liver's been doing that since we were born. It's free, and this is its job. So let's let our livers do what they need to do. You can't detox yourself with a tea.
If your patients could describe your approach in three words, what would you hope they'd say?
I'd hope they'd say that I'm caring, mm-hmm. I'm a safe space, and that I'm human. So I never, ever want a patient to feel judged in my rooms, and that probably matters more to me than anything else.
I absolutely love that. The safe space, not feeling judged, because weight is such a big topic for
people.
It's
so sensitive, and I get patients crying in my rooms. One of the things I always ask is a weight history, you know, from going back to childhood.
Yes.
And I've got a box of tissues, and best believe they get used in every single consultation. People are very emotional talking about this.
Let's start now at the beginning, Farah. For listeners hearing terms like Ozempic, GLP-1s, everywhere online, what actually is a GLP-1 medication?
Okay, cool. So GLP-1 stands for glucagon-like peptide mm-hmm. 1. And I know that sounds like a mouthful, but basically what it is this is a hormone in our body that we naturally produce, and it's produced in our intestines and released after we eat. Mm-hmm. Now, the natural version of this only lasts a few seconds, and what it does is we know now that it's got effects on every organ in the body, essentially, but in terms of a weight management and sugar control point of view, it works on your brain in various different ways. It controls appetite, it decreases food noise, it makes you feel fuller for longer and fuller quicker. It also delays your stomach from emptying quickly. So it's got a lot of actions in the body. But as I say, it lasts quite a short amount of time, the effect. So what the scientists have done is they've gone and made a synthetic version of this hormone that we already have, and they've modified it to increase its half-life, which means to have a longer effect in our body. And that's essentially what these, they've put it into an injectable form, and yeah, it's basically mimicking a hormone that we've already naturally producing in our gut.
So then medically speaking, what were the drugs originally designed for?
So they were originally mm-hmm. designed for diabetes primarily. Mm-hmm. So
type 1 or 2?
Type 2 diabetes. The earliest versions were developed to help people, as I say, with type 2 diabetes. And it was primarily to manage their blood sugar levels more effectively. And then weight loss was actually observed as a side effect. So patients were losing the significant amount of mm-hmm. weight. And that's when the researchers started paying closer attention to that and started noting these appetite suppressing mechanisms and the benefit they've got on weight management.
Why have they become such a massive part of the weight loss conversation globally, Farah?
So the GLP-1s, the results we're seeing from GLP-1s are unlike anything we've ever seen before in this space. So historically, weight loss medications were at best modest, the results of these medications. You'd get maybe a 5% reduction in body weight. But with the GLP-1s, we're seeing closer to 15, 20, even 25% weight loss in the clinical trials and actually in practice. And that's a huge thing. So for people who've tried everything, every diet, mm-hmm. every program, every supplement, you name it, and they've still struggled, this is significant. It's completely shifted the conversation about what's medically possible. And then I think it's also important to mention, I know you didn't ask me specifically mm-hmm. why they've exploded, you asking specifically in the weight loss context, but I think it would be very important for me to mention that we now also know that these molecules have incredible benefits basically in every organ of the body, regardless of weight loss and sugar control. So yes, this discussion's mm-hmm. about weight loss and sugar control, but we now know that they have massive benefit everywhere else. So they can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. They act on the pancreas. They can improve fatty liver disease. They've got major benefits for inflammation and autoimmune disease. So outside of the weight loss and the sugar control, these molecules are really incredible for other bodily systems.
So I'm going to be then controversial. Is everyone a candidate?
No, definitely not. And
just throwing that out there.
It is indeed controversial. So in terms of the medical guidelines, they're pretty specific. So mm-hmm. technically, we're looking at people who have a BMI of 30, so that's classified as obese, 30 or above, or a BMI of 27 or above, so that's classified by BMI as being overweight, mm-hmm. with any of the other related health conditions. So for example, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, insulin resistance, sleep apnea, any of these conditions that are commonly associated with being overweight. No, it's not a cosmetic tool for someone who wants to lose 5 kilos before going to Mauritius.
Please repeat that.
It is not a cosmetic tool for people who want to lose 5 kilos before going to Mauritius. It's a real medical intervention, and it's for people whose weight is genuinely impacting their health.
What role do genetics, hormones, insulin resistance, and metabolic health actually play in weight struggles?
It's enormous, and this is what I try to help patients understand from the very beginning. So we know now that obesity is about 40 to 70% hereditable, and your body weight is regulated by a very complex system. Mm-hmm. It involves dozens of hormones, your gut microbiome, your genetics, your stress hormones, your sleep, the environment you live in. And for example, when someone has insulin resistance, their body is essentially stuck in a fat storing mode, regardless of how little they eat. So the genetics influence where you store fat, how you store fat, how your appetite hormones behave, how effective your metabolism is. And it's not just a simple equation of calories in, calories out anymore. That model is outdated. So obviously calories matter, of course, but we now know that the regulation of body weight is far more complex than just telling people to eat less and move more.
We'll be back after the ad break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're still tuned into Imperfectly Polished with me, Monique Bondi, and today we're getting really honest about the psychology behind GLP-1 medication, body image, and the pressure so many people feel to look a certain way. Farah, why do you think so many people are secretly using GLP-1 medications but publicly denying it?
Monique, I think it's because we live in a world that morally rewards thinness and honestly morally penalizes needing help. This idea, and it's been around for centuries, that if you're thin, it's because you earned it. You earned it through discipline, through sacrifice, through self-control, through determination. And the moment you admit that you had medical help, suddenly people question whether it counts, you know? And that's an incredibly unfair standard that we don't apply to any other area of health. Nobody questions whether your cholesterol medication counts as helping it.
Absolutely.
And I also just want to say, I want to just touch on the narrative that this is an easy way out.
Yes.
Because that is an incredibly deeply simplistic view. And it's honestly something I find very frustrating. So, you know, we don't say, talking about diabetes, for example, we don't say that insulin is the easy way out for a diabetic. We don't say that taking your blood pressure medication is laziness. But for some reason, the moment it's weight, suddenly there's a moral dimension attached. There's, we almost put the blame on the person. And these medications, they work on the brain and the endocrine system. They're correcting a physiological dysregulation. So calling that cheating or the easy way out or saying it doesn't count completely misunderstands what obesity actually is at a biological level.
Do you think there's still shame attached to needing help with weight management?
Absolutely. And it's insidious because it comes from everywhere. It's on social media, your family, your friends, and honestly, sometimes even doctors, which is of a big concern. So I've had patients come in almost apologetic that they're there and they almost feel like they should have been able to sort this out themselves. And they're so sorry they've had to come to me and that it's come to this. And a lot of patients carry in walk in carrying enormous shame around their weight. And honestly, they really shouldn't have to. You would never criticize someone for taking asthma medication, and you'd never question why they're seeing a doctor for it. Imagine you said to an asthmatic, why didn't you just sort this out yourself?
Yeah,
you'd
exactly.
think I'm absolutely crazy.
Nuts.
Why are you not just managing this yourself?
Yeah.
Why are you going to a doctor? Why do you need help?
Yeah. Social media, Farah, has glamorized thinness again in a major way. Are we seeing a dangerous return to toxic beauty standards?
So I would say yes, and I think it's very complicated because it's getting dressed up as wellness in language now. So it's no longer, I want to be thin. Mm-hmm. People are saying, I want to be healthy, but the aesthetic ideal underneath actually hasn't changed. So we're back to extremely slim bodies being the standard, and we know that the GLP-1s are obviously accelerating that.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is full of before and after pictures.
Sorry to interrupt. Have you seen a picture lately of Kelly Osbourne?
I was about to say.
Insane.
No, it's frightening.
Frightening. She's a twig.
Absolutely frightening. Yeah, I don't quite have words for that. That is not what these medications are intended for. And what I was saying was that social media is full of all these before and afters, mm-hmm. but actually they're just before and thins. Mm-hmm. And health is almost incidental to the narrative. You get thin. Yes. Oh, and also, by the way, I'm improving my health.
Do you think people are chasing health or chasing acceptance and validation?
Honestly, I think both, and I think it's okay to admit that. Most patients who come to me have a genuine health concern. Mm-hmm. So either they're tired, they have joint pain, their bloods are worrying, someone's told them that they're at risk for cardiovascular disease. But they also do want to feel attractive and confident and accepted. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with that. That's totally understandable. These things aren't mutually exclusive. Where I think it becomes problematic mm-hmm. is when acceptance is the only driver and health is used as justification for what is actually a very distressing relationship with your body.
What psychological impact can rapid weight loss have on someone's emotionally and mental well-being?
So it can actually be really destabilizing, and I don't actually think this is something that gets discussed enough. Mm-hmm. Your identity can be very tied up in your body, even if the relationship isn't a good one, even if it's a painful, toxic relationship. So what we see is that people think that losing weight will automatically solve all their problems, will automatically make them happy. And sometimes, yes, it improves their confidence and their health enormously, but it can also feel almost strange emotionally. Your relationships start to change, mm-hmm. the attention changes, you've gone from maybe not being someone in the limelight to someone everyone's talking about. And sometimes people realize that they're still actually unhappy underneath, and mm-hmm. and that can be quite confronting. Another thing to bear in mind is that a lot of people rely on food for comfort. So once we take that crutch away by suppressing people's appetite, decreasing the amount they eat, that food noise, that binge eating.
They have to face
exactly.
their stuff.
And then people sometimes feel like they've lost their nunu blankets, quite honestly.
Got it.
And so really, emotional support is one of the absolute key factors in a weight loss journey. It's not optional. It's a standard part of the treatment.
So we're seeing people who are already thin, we touched on this, using these medications, let's put it recreationally, in inverted commas. What concerns you about this, Farah?
Everything concerns me about this.
Let it out.
So these are real drugs. These aren't benign drugs. They're mm-hmm. biologically active drugs. Mm-hmm. They affect your gastrointestinal system, your muscle mass. There can be effects on your cardiovascular system. And using them without a clinical indication means you're taking on real risks. Mm-hmm. You know, every medication has risks, and this is no different. And for what? There might not even be any real benefit, you know? But what honestly worries me beyond the physical is what mm-hmm. it says about us culturally and as society, that people who are medically healthy
yeah.
are willing to make themselves unwell in pursuit of being smaller. I mean, that's actually a crisis.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
It's an invasive drug. It's an injection. Who likes needles? It's mm-hmm. the fact that we're willing to do whatever it takes to be thin and small is frightening.
Absolutely frightening. Is there a risk of that people become emotionally dependent on these medications instead of addressing their deeper lifestyle or emotional issues?
Yeah.
So would you recommend for people to go deeper and maybe go to a psychologist or,
absolutely.
You know, use the other means while they're on the GLP-1s?
Absolutely. And this is something I'm very deliberate about mm-hmm. in my practice, let's say. So the medication quiets the food noise. There's
yes.
no doubt about that. And it quiets that constant preoccupation with eating that mm-hmm. so many people that have the disease of obesity experience. And for some people, that relief is so profound that they actually haven't had to develop any other coping mechanisms for the stress or emotions they feel mm-hmm. that don't involve food. So if for whatever reason the medication's ever stopped, mm-hmm. Those patterns come rushing back, it has to be paired with psychological work. It's not a substitute for it. As I said, this should be paramount to any weight loss journey.
So you advise a holistic approach?
Completely. And there are psychologists within our community mm-hmm. that specialize specifically in this, that work very closely with the doctors who are doing the medical mm-hmm. prescriptions. But I also think it's important that the doctors themselves do an element of counseling and that. But they're professionals who specialize in this, and there's no reason we shouldn't be using them.
So I keep noticing the term online, the Ozempic body. When someone's as Ozempic described as looking potentially like a lollipop, what causes that, Farah?
So this lollipop body happens when someone has rapid weight loss, and honestly that it's unmanaged properly. Mm-hmm. So with these drugs, you know, you lose, well, actually with any weight loss, but even mm-hmm. potentially more so with these drugs, you lose overall body weight, but that's not just fat. You also lose muscle mass. So for someone who's taking a GLP-1, mm-hmm. if you're not eating enough protein, you're not doing enough strength and resistance training, you're not stimulating your muscles enough, this person will actually start to break down their muscle for energy. Your body finds alternative energy sources. And what happens is you end up with a lower overall weight, but a higher proportion of body fat relative to muscle mass.
Sure.
So the body almost looks thin, but soft. You know, your face can look gaunt. We talk about Ozempic face, Ozempic bum, Ozempic skin, you name it.
It's quite scary.
It is scary. And also just to note, it's not just Ozempic. That's mm-hmm. just unfortunately got the bad rep, exactly. And we actually, I mean, we have a medical term for this. We call it sarcopenic mm-hmm. obesity in some cases, which is exactly that. It's high fat mass, but low muscle mass. And sarcopenic obesity is mm-hmm. actually a worse metabolic outcome than before the medications in some respects. Mm-hmm. Not always, but it can be. And this is why supervision and nutrition guidance matter so much, because there's really stuff that needs to be done alongside these medications.
So let's talk about someone who wants to go on a GLP-1 but doesn't want to change their eating habits. They're still eating the chips, the chocolates, the muffins, the croissants. And would they lose weight? But it doesn't address the nutritional discussion mm-hmm. around a well-balanced diet.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the myths of taking mm-hmm. a GLP-1, you know, that it's going to just sort you out. Mm-hmm. And we know that's really not true. For patients taking GLP-1s, protein intake becomes mm-hmm. even more important. I mean, it's important for everyone, but particularly so in these patients, because as I say, your appetite is suppressed and you have to be really intentional about what you're eating mm-hmm. and about eating enough of the right things. So this is why the whole concept of just eat less approach completely falls apart with the GLP-1s, because it's not only about how much you eat, but it's about what you eat, as you said, and how much nutrition you can actually fit into a smaller eating window or a smaller eating period. So patients are eating less. We know this. So it becomes about getting more, basically more mm-hmm. bang for your buck. You know, you're eating less. You need to make sure what you're eating is nutritious and giving you what your body needs. And on that as well, you know, as I said, strength and resistance training is a non-negotiable if you actually want to preserve your muscle mass. Sleep's also very important. We know that poor sleep drives the hunger hormones, mm-hmm. even through the medication. And hydration is important for numerous reasons, including managing side effects, stress management. You know, as I talk about being holistic, and these aren't optional add-ons. They honestly determine whether your outcomes are actually healthy or is it just a smaller number on the scale.
I want to get to the side effects, but we are going for a break and we'll be back in a minute.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're still tuned into Imperfectly Polished with me, Monique Bondi, and today we're getting really honest about the psychology behind GLP-1 medications, body image, and the pressure so many people feel to look a certain way. Farah, can we touch on the side effects of using a GLP-1?
Sure. So I think the side effects are things that people don't actually talk enough about. I mean, to be completely honest, mm-hmm. there are patients who stop it because of how intolerable the side effects can be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the gastrointestinal stuff mm-hmm. gets mentioned all the time, you know, the constipation, the diarrhea, mm-hmm. the nausea, the acid reflux, even to go as far as sulfur burps, you know, sure. there's some real stuff. But I think, no, it's a real thing. But I think people really underestimate just how unpleasant it can actually be. You know, as I say, the nausea, vomiting, constipation, it can actually be quite severe, mm-hmm. very severe, mm-hmm. in fact. There's other things like nutritional gaps. So, you know, you become sort of more at risk for nutritional deficiencies, mm-hmm. again, because you're not eating enough of the nutritional foods.
So does that mean
foods.
You have to supplement with vitamins?
We do sometimes. Okay. It's not a clear cut, yes or okay. no. Some people see hair thinning. Some people, you know, obviously we know about the muscle loss, which mm-hmm. we've touched on a lot. Fatigue. It really doesn't get enough airtime. You know, mm-hmm. this what we spoke about earlier, the psychological adjustment when that food noise actually yes. goes away. And again, I said it earlier, but for some people, the food was their main source of comfort and pleasure. And now that's sort of being mm-hmm. taken away. So we do see, you know, there can be a feeling almost of emptiness, if we can call it. People do talk about Ozempic personality along with Ozempic face and stuff. And that's really not, there isn't a scientific basis for it. There's no evidence that mm-hmm. shows it actually dampens your mood or anything like that. It doesn't have any physiological effect on that from what the evidence is showing so far. But we do know that indirectly it may actually have an effect on this feeling of emptiness or flatness because of all these crutches you're now losing.
Are we finally starting to understand obesity as a medical condition rather than simply a willpower issue, Farah?
We are, but definitely not enough. We are getting there, though. But yeah, not enough and not fast enough. So I would say that the medical community has largely started to accept it for mm-hmm. the most part. You know, for example, organizations like the World Health Organization, the World Obesity mm-hmm. Federation, they officially classify obesity as a chronic disease, much like any other chronic disease. But for some reason, the public narrative, and unfortunately, even some healthcare providers are still very behind in this thinking. Patients still come to me having been told by doctors to just eat less and move more. Mm-hmm. And if they as if they haven't tried
yeah,
that.
I mean, as if they haven't probably done it their whole lives.
Exactly.
Like, the yo-yo diet is a thing.
Exactly. And it's just people act like as if it's that simple. Mm-hmm. Not only within the public, but I think one of the problems is that even within medicine, the stigma is still very real. We are not seeing this as the chronic disease like it deserves to be seen. As I say, it's been officially classified as a chronic disease, along with diabetes, asthma, hypertension, lupus, whatever you want mm-hmm. to discuss.
What does the term GLP-1 abuse look like medically?
So yeah, this is quite similar to the recreational mm-hmm. use that we discussed earlier. But honestly, all it means is using it without a real clinical indication. You know, whether that means using higher doses than prescribed to accelerate the rate at which you lose weight, using it long term without any monitoring, sourcing it outside of regulated healthcare, you know, stuff like compounded versions, online pharmacies, getting it from your friends, your hairdresser. no, it's scary. It happens. It really happens.
I would imagine it does.
And, you know, when we talk about abuse and drug abuse, we think of these dramatic outcomes. But with GLP-1s, the abuse isn't always dramatic. Sometimes it literally just looks like someone quietly taking a medication mm-hmm. that nobody talks about or that nobody knows about, with no doctor involved, no bloods being checked, no one watching what's happening to them on their progress.
So you're deciding your own. You're deciding your own.
Your own course of exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know,
how much you're taking. You're deciding whether
how quickly you're going up, how quickly you're going down. No one's watching your muscle mass, your body composition, your nutritional status. All these things I've discussed that are real risks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially, it's using it without a clinical indication, or even if there is a clinical indication, in the wrong way without appropriate monitoring.
So let me ask you this, because this has always been on my mind and I'm sure many listeners are wondering the same thing. Do you have to be on a GLP-1 for the rest of your life, Farah?
The favorite question. Yeah, literally everybody asks this. So I'm going to talk medically again. Okay. I'm not talking cosmetically for the people who want to lose their 5 kilos
for Mauritius.
as I've said over and over again, obesity is a chronic, relapsing, mm-hmm. and progressive disease. Would you stop your insulin? No, as a diabetic. So yes, if you are a person who is suffering from the underlying disease of obesity mm-hmm. or overweight, you will need to be on treatment for it your entire life. I also want to just mention this whole narrative of people saying, oh, these GLP-1s, the minute you stop them, they stop working and you put
and
on
you
all
blow
the weight.
Up.
Obviously, they stop working. You're not taking the medication anymore. Why on earth should they still work? If you stop taking your insulin, your sugar's going to go up.
Yes.
Why, for some reason, people think that these medication effects should last for the rest of their lives. Obviously, it's not going to have an effect if you're not taking it. But to answer your question, yes, it's a chronic disease. Mm-hmm. We need to start classifying and realizing that. And the same as any chronic disease requires chronic treatment, there's no reason this is any different.
So how did we get here, Farah, as a society where being smaller is still so deeply tied to worth, desirability, and success?
So honestly, Monique, that's, I think, centuries of conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. for decades, we've associated thinness, as I said earlier, with discipline, with attractiveness, with self-control, with success. And unfortunately, I think this is especially true for women. And then on top of all of this came social media, and this just poured petrol.
Feel like it's the devil, social
media. Exactly. It just poured petrol on what's already very much there. Mm-hmm. And only now are we starting to push back culturally. And this pushback is still incredibly fragile. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this whole thing of the body positivity movement, and
yes.
It made real inroads. But then the GLP-1s arrived, and it almost feels in some ways like we've regressed again. Though I would also say, and obviously this is important, that, you know, a lot of people on these medications are genuinely reclaiming their health. And that obviously does deserve to be celebrated without shame too.
I feel like the body positivity movement feels a bit jaded now, because if they've presented themselves comfortable in their own skin
exactly.
and okay with who they are, and the next minute they are on GLP-1s, the followers feel defeated.
Absolutely. As we spoke about Kelly Osbourne, mm-hmm. she was always a fuller bodied person,
yeah.
for lack of a better word.
Chubby,
you know?
Yeah. You're using the
politically
correct term.
You know, and even like Adele, mm-hmm. Oprah, all these ladies were, well, obviously not, but perceived to be sort of comfortable in their skin and almost...
an example to
everyone. An example, exactly, that you can be successful and you can be beautiful and you can be a powerhouse woman mm-hmm. despite your size. Mm-hmm. And it really has, unfortunately, taken that away to some extent.
For Farah, for someone considering the GLP-1 medication, what's the first conversation they should really be having with themselves?
So I think the first thing is actually realizing and accepting the fact that they have a chronic disease and that this is a medication for a disease. It's not the easy way out. It's not something to be ashamed of, as I keep using the analogy. Mm-hmm. If you've got diabetes, you've got to accept the fact that you're going to need insulin. And then I think the next important thing, once you've actually realized why you need this medication, mm-hmm. is, am I prepared to do the work alongside this? You know, because the medication, it will reduce your appetite, but it will never rewire your relationship with food. It won't build your fitness. It won't address why you emotionally eat. And the GLP-1s are phenomenal in the right patient, but they're definitely not a silver bullet. These conversations, they have to happen. They have to be had, and ideally with a professional who isn't just going to hand you a prescription. And that's what I was saying earlier. You know, the doctors themselves should be counseling their patients. They should be explaining the full range of what's needed to really benefit from these medications. And we see it so often that they're not. You go for a 10-minute consultation, you ask mm-hmm. for your script, you get your script, and then you don't actually know what to do with it. And
that's insane.
No, it's very common.
So let me use myself as an example. I always take one for the team, for the listeners. If I came to you, Farah, and said to you, I want to go on a GLP-1, obviously you need to look into my BMI, would you say yes or would you say no, looking at me?
Putting me on the spot here, hey?
Yes.
Monique, the answer is it depends. As I say,
it's deeply individualized. There are technically medical definitions of who is appropriate to take these medications, you know, the BMI of 30 or 27 with a related condition.
And their glucose levels, I guess, no? Sugar levels?
Yeah, well, that's, yes. So we're talking specifically for the weight loss, and I'm assuming you're asking for it for that, not for your sugar control.
Yes.
So honestly, I would have to do a full medical history, a full medical examination. And as I keep saying, there needs to be a clinical indication. You know, there are, and I'll be honest, this might be a controversial thing to say, might get in trouble for it, but there are thin people who benefit from this drug. As I said earlier, we know that there are huge benefits outside of weight loss and outside of glycemic control. For example, inflammation. You know, we see a lot of rheumatology patients coming and their rheumatologists have actually suggested these drugs, and it's not for weight loss and it's not for sugar control, and we see great benefit. So it really is on an individualized basis. And as I said earlier, there has to be a real clinical indication. So if you're saying my joints are sore, I've got this inflammation, then maybe it's something we would consider, but not just, again, because you want to lose a couple of kilos.
For Mauritius.
Exactly.
We are going for a break and we'll be back in a minute.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Farah, how do we move the conversation from skinny culture to actual wellness?
I think it comes down to the fact that we actually have to stop rewarding thinness as an outcome and start asking better questions. Not how much weight have you lost, or you look so great, what have you done, what are you losing? The question should be, how are your energy levels? How's your sleep? How are your bloods? How's your overall health improved? How do you feel in your body? And my patients know that I don't really care about the scale, to be completely honest. Yes, they stand on it because it's an indicator, you know, to know we're going in the right direction. But that's really not what I care about. I care about, how are you feeling? Are these drugs improving your wellness and your health? Because that's what the intention is. And really, we need the healthcare providers to talk about this and to talk about weight without the shame and the media that shows a broader range of healthy bodies. You know, we were talking about Oprah and all these ladies who really were an example and a role model for people with bigger bodies. So, yeah, we actually need to sort of try get back to that, I guess, that there is such a thing as a healthy body that might be a bit bigger.
What does responsible medical weight management actually look like?
It looks like how you would manage any other chronic disease. Yeah. I don't see it as any different from any other chronic disease. So going to see a medical practitioner who is skilled and trained and qualified. And that person needs to do a proper assessment first. So they need to take a thorough medical history. Sometimes they do some bloods. They need to understand the weight history and why someone has gotten to where they are, what's driving this weight gain. And then I think it looks like setting up realistic goals, you know. And again, these goals should be about health markers, not just the number on the scale. And then it obviously needs to have, you know, regular follow-up, nutritional support, exercise guidance, all these things we've spoken about. And then I don't want to call it an exit strategy because I've discussed the fact that for a person who actually has the disease of obesity, this is going to be a chronic medication. But we do need to talk about what happens when we don't want to keep someone on the highest dose for
whatever. What happens next?
Yeah, we do want to get you onto a lower maintenance dose. So we need to, you know, discuss about what happens when we reduce the medication and how do we sustain what we've achieved. It's the key message here is that this is a program, not just a prescription.
So Farah, as a doctor in wellness and aesthetics, how do you personally balance helping patients enhance themselves while also encouraging self-acceptance?
I think about this a lot, and yeah, it's something I pay a lot of attention to. So my honest view is that these two aren't in conflict, provided you're doing it right. I want my patients to make changes, but from a place of self-respect, not self-loathing. If someone comes to me saying, I hate myself and I want to fix that by changing my body, that's a conversation I need to have with them. And it needs to be a very careful conversation because, again, the body change won't fix the self-hatred. But if someone comes to me and says, I love my body and I want to support it better and I want to help it reach its optimal health, that's a completely different story. That's a completely different energy. And yeah, I'm fully here for that.
So Farah, just before we wrap up, I want to touch on something that's becoming a major concern here in South Africa and abroad as well, I'm sure. Because as demand for these medications grow, we mentioned, so does the darker side of the injury. With South Africa's medicine regulator and pharmacy watchdog intensifying their crackdown on the unlawful manufacture and distribution of unregistered GLP-1 medications, concerns are growing around the country's rapidly expanding and largely unregulated weight loss drug market. From a medical perspective, how dangerous is this trend and what risks should consumers be aware of when accessing these medications outside of regulated healthcare channels?
Your question is how dangerous it is,
basically,
is it?
And the
answer is very dangerous, Monique. And I think people genuinely underestimate this. You know, when you source a medication outside of regulated channels, whether that's a compounded version mm-hmm. or from unverified pharmacies or, as I say, from your hairdresser, online suppliers.
We're not giving them a bad rap. We just
No, we love our hairdressers,
yeah,
but
we
they're
love.
Not our doctors.
Yeah.
You honestly have no idea what you're actually injecting into your body. You know, the concentration mm-hmm. can be widely off. Sterility is not guaranteed. The cold chain might have mm-hmm. been broken. And once again, beyond the product itself, there's mm-hmm. no one monitoring you.
No.
You know, we've spoken about how the importance of a thorough medical consultation and monitoring. You know, there's no one checking your bloods, no one adjusting your dosage, no one knows if you're developing one of the complications. So, yeah, so, as you mentioned, SAHPRA and the Pharmacy Council are cracking down on this, and I believe it's for good reason. People have actually been harmed, and the cost of saving, mm-hmm. it's not worth the risk. And I do want to just make a caveat that I live in the real world, and mm-hmm. I understand how cost prohibitive
yes,
these medications
are. Yes, we haven't touched on this before.
Very few South Africans, unfortunately, very few people can unfortunately afford these medications.
Does medical aid cover it for obesity?
No.
Not at all?
No.
So
not yet.
Okay.
Hopefully it's moving towards that. So I live in the real world mm-hmm. and I'm not oblivious to the fact that these are prohibitively expensive.
So then, Farah, is it a luxury?
I don't think it's a luxury, but what I do want to say, and the onus is on all of us as medical professionals to be honest with our patients. Mm-hmm. It's patient autonomy at the end of the day. The patient can choose whatever they want to do. Our duty is to give them all the facts and let them make an informed decision. I know of a doctor who told a patient that this is a generic. That's not true, a compounded version.
Sure.
It's not a generic. This patient took a drug thinking she was taking a registered generic for this
sure.
drug. We don't have generics in South Africa yet. So, yes, it's patient choice, but that patient's choice needs to be made on honesty and truthfulness. And I just want to say again, this mm-hmm. is a real medication for a real disease. You know, you would never think of getting your asthma medication from anywhere other than a well-known pharmacy. Yet people are taking chances mm-hmm. with these drugs, and these are biologically active drugs that get injected directly into your body. These aren't benign. This is serious stuff. Mm-hmm.
So Farah, before we end our very interesting talk about GLP-1s, something more about you. What's one daily ritual that keeps you grounded?
I would have to say my mornings with my children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before the day starts, before my practice opens, before all the emails start mm-hmm. coming through. And I just spend time with my girls. And even if it's just 20 minutes with them before I leave and before the day starts, it sounds small, but it really changes the whole day for me.
What's something you wish women would stop apologizing for?
I wish women would stop apologizing for taking up space. So whether it's professionally, physically, emotionally, you know, we apologize for having needs and for having opinions, actually for just existing too loudly. And I'd really love for that to be over.
What does feeling the best version of yourself actually mean to you now?
Sure. So that's actually changed a lot for me recently. Mm-hmm. So these days, I think it's more about feeling peaceful and satisfied in my own life. Being present, doing meaningful work, knowing I'm really making a difference, having the people I love around me. I'm less interested in chasing perfection than I was 10 years ago. It used to be about chasing the title, chasing the achievement, chasing mm-hmm. the accolades. And the best version of me isn't a title. It's not a body shape. It's a way of being.
So Farah, if people want to follow you on Instagram, what is your handle? Where can they find you?
So I am on Instagram, and it's for both the weight management as well as my aesthetics clinic. And it's at Dr. Dr. Farah Green, FarraGreen. And I post a lot of educational content there regularly. It's very educational.
Farah, thank you so much for such an honest, compassionate, and incredibly important conversation. I think today you reminded us that wellness is never just physical. It's also emotional, psychological, and deeply personal too. And to everyone listening, whether you're on your own health journey, struggling with body image, or simply trying to feel better in your own skin, may you remember that your worth was never meant to be measured by a number on a scale. You've been listening to me, Monique Bondi, on Imperfectly Polished. Until next time, stay soft with yourself, stay curious, and beautifully imperfect. Thanks, Farah.
Thanks for having me.